The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Roto-World Football Show. I am Matt Straup. It is Thursday, August 25th, and today we are taking a look at some ADP battles. Players at the same position who are going right next to each other in drafts. We're going to tell you which way we're leaning on each one and why we're leaning that way. I'm joined by Pat Corain, Lawrence Jackson, and Kyle Dvorchik. Fellas, after a long offseason, 2 weeks to go until the season kicks off, and I'm wondering if anyone else at this point starts to feel like we are in hour 11 of a 13-hour road trip. You've like powered through the drive, but then the last couple hours just become absolute agony. You know, the kids are melting down, traffic on the New Jersey Turnpike. You don't know how you're going to get there. Has anyone else had this experience, and does anyone else relate? Lawrence, are you surely understand the New Jersey Turnpike part of it at least?
Yeah, definitely, man. You know, it's, we like right there, man. Coming to the point where all of those, you know, he got that dog in him. All that's going to be put to the test. All right. Of those threads on Twitter will be put to the test. You know what I'm saying? All of that.
Who's
won't
reviewing
matter
the
no
threads? Who's grading the threads?
Yeah. There's a commission that's going to be run by the Senate, and they'll figure it out.
Yeah, you know, all of that. He's a 10, but all of those trends is we about to have some real results coming up soon now. Right. So we are at the 11th of the 13th hour right now. So we getting close, man, and I love it.
I do feel a tolerance building in terms of, you know, my drafting. The other day I had a DraftKings draft going and put my phone down, started to put dishes away and forgot that I was in a draft.
I literally did that like 8 days ago. Dishes too, specifically putting dishes away. You know, you fire up a best ball draft while you're doing some chores, folding laundry or whatever. Easy to multitask, or so you tell yourself, and then you time out.
And then it's over.
Correct.
What I realized is if you do 2 to 3 drafts at the same time, doesn't happen because now your heart starts pumping a little bit. So I've got to kind of up the adrenaline levels with additional drafts. How the late August period is affecting me.
What I really heard there is that Kyle and Corain, you guys both get into an extreme flow state when you're doing dishes. That's what it is. You're self-focused.
Dishes is a good time to turn on a podcast and just really like process the day, like really just decompose, think about your life and whatnot. Corain, are you burned out on best ball drafts yet? Because like Underdog has the Pomeranian or whatever, the rake free ones. And I'm like, obviously this is like the tournaments you want to be firing on. And I did like a few, I multi-tabled like two or three sessions. So I got like 8 done. And I was like, I'm exhausted. I can't do any more of these.
I'm not. I thought I was. And then it turns out I was just sick of using DraftKings. I'm sorry, DraftKings, fix your site. Underdog, I had 50 bullets left in Best Ball Mania. Started firing those and it was pretty fun. I think I have more of a second wind than I thought I would.
Wow.
I'm hoping to hit a second win in this final week or so. Because I want to get more down, but I tried to multi-table on the Pomeranian and got like 7 done. And I was like, I've just drafted the same team 6.5 times. Can I please go home?
Yeah. Lawrence, you said second win there. I don't think that would count as a second win. We'd have to be on win number 8 or something like that at this point.
Listen,
right?
These two dudes right here, Corain and Kyle, these are the best ball dogs right here. And I can speak from experience because I was having dinner with these dudes a couple weeks ago. And the conversation was them doing best ball drafts right there. So they really about that life.
One would argue that's not a conversation. That's just. Yeah.
And for dessert, we just did another best ball draft too.
Yeah, that's man. Right. Y'all really about that life. So, hey, you, living what you preaching. So you can't be mad at that. We at the dinner table having beers and drinking. You know, we chilling and these dudes. In the best ball draft.
I was like, having beers and chilling too. I just
I was doing those other things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Multitasking.
I'm multi-tabling life.
All right, let's get into these ADP battles. This idea was suggested by Ukraine and is based on a rapid fire segment that Pat and Denny did recently. So we're going to expand on that today with a bigger set of ADP battles. We've got one quarterback battle, three running backs, three wide receivers, and one tight end battle. And these ADPs are from Football Guys, right? Players Championship, Karain?
Yeah, courtesy of Fantasy Mojo. The Football Guys Players Championship ADPs.
So we're going to start at the top with quarterbacks. The position battle we have chosen there is Kyler Murray, whose ADP is 75, versus Jalen Hurts, ADP one spot later, 76. Karain, who do you have here and why?
Yeah, this is kind of interesting that this has become a battle because Kyler Murray, I felt like, was just behind kind of the Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes guys, and Jalen Hurts was further down kind of with like Burrow. But now Murray has really dropped. And to me, maybe I'm anchored to the previous ADP, but to be able to get Kyler Murray, you know, sometimes behind Jalen Hurts feels like a real value. I like Jalen Hurts' upside. I'm in on that. But it does feel kind of like the mystery box thing where it's like Jalen Hurts could be anything, even Kyler Murray, you know? Kyler Murray had 27 points per game 2 years ago, and he had almost 25. This is an FFPC scoring, almost 25 points per game last year, which is more than Jalen Hurts. I do expect Hurts to take a step forward, but I also think that Murray can get back to where he was. He was awesome before he had an ankle injury last year. He really tailed off at the end of the year. This year, he's going to start with Marquise Brown, rekindle that college connection. Maybe we get a little bit more out of Rondale Moore to start the year, hopefully. And then at the end of the year, you got DeAndre Hopkins. Could be a reverse situation, depending on how much Call of Duty he plays, where DeAndre Hopkins could kind of take this offense to the next level down the stretch, and he's winning you fantasy championships instead of tailing off in the most important weeks.
Yeah, I like the way you put it. Like, it could be anything, even a Kyler Murray, because we've seen Kyler Murray do it all. We've seen him have the incredible rushing season. And then before he got banged up last year through like seven games, he was on pace for 4,800 yards and 36 touchdowns, like truly elite passing numbers. And we know he's an elite runner. I know Jalen Hurts is an elite runner. I think he's a good passer, but I think that I saw last year what I needed to see from Kyler Murray. So given that now they are going close enough, I'm taking Kyler Murray. But if Kyler Murray gets, you know, if I get sniped on him, I'm totally fine taking Hurts too, because these are the archetype of quarterbacks we want to target. One of them, I just have a modest amount more confidence that they can do both. They can be the elite runner and the elite passer, and that's Kyler Murray. But it's not a decisive win, if you want to call these wins and losses, for me. I think they're both good picks, honestly.
For sure. Like, I'm gonna go the other way. Jalen Hurts right here. It ain't like no strong opinion. Like, I'm finna just be like, oh no, how could you take, you know what I'm saying? Jalen Hurts was, you know, QB1 through 11 weeks last year. Then he got hurt, you know, kind of fell off just a little bit there. He gets A.J. Brown this year. That can only help him in his situation. Another year of development with Devontae Smith, one of the better lines in football, probably the best runner on their team. He is the best runner on their team right now. We talk about the schedule that the Eagles have coming off the gate with teams that include the Lions, the Vikings, who don't have, you know, great defense, the Commanders, the Jaguars. Then they see the Houston Texans down the line as well. They're in the NFC East, you know, that division. So that's why I would give the slight edge to Jalen Hurts. If I was going to go with Kyler Murray, it would be because I feel like he's, you know, more liable to throw for the 4,000, because we both know they could run. But this is why I will go with Jalen Hurts in particular. But again, like I say, it's not like nothing crazy for me. I take either one. I want one of these quarterbacks that could run for 600-800 yards. I want one of these guys. So in this situation, I get a slight edge to Hurts.
And the Jalen Hurts passing yardage, sorry, Corinne, is like maybe the biggest variable in this whole thing. I mean, what did he throw for, like 3,100 yards last year? I mean, if that you know, right, spikes, then
only 16 touchdowns too.
What were we gonna say, Corinne?
Well, I think he's more fun to build around Hurts because, you know, if you get AJ Brown, then when Hurts gets back to you in the late sixth, at this point, it's like it feels like a victory because he tends to go a little bit before. And then you can also, if you don't get AJ Brown, you can build around him with Dallas Goedert, who I really like. The Kyler stuff's a little bit tougher because you got the Hopkins 6-game suspension. Marquise Brown is, like, you know, a little more expensive than I'd like. So anyway, I like both guys a lot. I think we're all in agreement there.
All right, next up, we're going to go to running backs. We have three of these ADP battles we're going to look at. We're going to start near the top of drafts with Dalvin Cook, an ADP of 9, versus Najee Harris, an ADP of 10. Now, with Dalvin Cook, some of us may worry about injuries. With Najee, some of us may worry about his workload not being quite as robust as it was last year. So, Lawrence, where are you leaning on this ADP battle?
Well, for me, man, it's an easy one for me because I feel like Dalvin Cook going to be the top running back in fantasy this season coming up. Yeah, as far as the injury concern with him, you know what I'm saying? But after this season is over with, there's going to be new running backs and new receivers who get some new injury that will be worried about going into next year.
Right.
You know, he got the thing with his shoulder. He had a 200-yard rushing game with that shoulder last season. And a lot of people feel like Kevin O'Connell coming in and implementing the more pass-heavy scheme is going to hurt him. I think it's actually going to help Dalvin Cook because he's already a back who's caught the ball out of the backfield well in his time in the league. You know, I feel like he'll be able to give you a more consistent floor. Najee Harris is coming off a year in which he led the league in running back receptions, 74. That's all fine and dandy. What does work in his favor is, you know, he's going to get that workload. But again, that could be a detriment to him as well. And I just think the overall offense is going to be better for the Vikings. So this is why I'll go with Dalvin Cook in this particular situation. Easy one for me, to be honest.
I completely agree about the point of the Vikings passing more actually being good for Dalvin Cook. I had an article up this week on legendary upside at the running back position going through, based on research I did last year, going through looking at the seasons where a running back has scored 23-plus points per game. When a running back does that, it tilts the entire fantasy landscape. You basically have to have that guy that year. Dalvin Cook has had one of those seasons. He's the only running back to have one of those seasons since 2010 with less than 4 receptions per game. To get there without a strong receiving workload is very difficult. You don't have to be Christian McCaffrey. You can be Todd Gurley, who did it twice. That's kind of the path that I see now for Dalvin Cook, at least potentially, where he gets, you know, to just above 4 receptions per game. And that additional high-value workload through the air could really propel him to getting back to being the guy you need this year. I think he has a much clearer path to that than Najee Harris, who kind of already had all of the work. He's going to be a lower scoring offense, Najee Harris. And, you know, he's not dynamic. I mean, maybe he takes a step forward in terms of his efficiency, in terms of his big play ability in his second season. But that was the concern for him coming into the league, is that he didn't have a lot of long runs in college. He was a sufficient receiver, but not particularly dynamic. All of those red flags showed up in his rookie year. You worry about how good the offense is going to be as a whole. The Steelers' offensive line could be very poor. So the efficiency concerns with Najee, I think Najee could easily outscore Cook. But if one of these guys gets to the level where you had to have him, I think it's Cook.
Yeah, I'll try and be contrarian with maybe the wide receiver takes, maybe some of the later running back takes, but I'm kind of going to go 3 for 3 here. The good news for Najee is that, I mean, what Crane talked about is important, that you have to be one of the, like, do-it-all backs. You don't have to see every single carry. You don't have to see every single target. You have to do a decent amount of both to be these, like, must-have league winner types. We know Harris does that. I mean, you know, 74 catches and over 300 carries last year, led the NFL in touches. But I think, to me, the kicker here is that I think it's going to be Kenny Pickett pretty quickly. Pickett has looked really good in the preseason. And although that will help the offense because Ben Roethlisberger was pretty dang bad, it's not going to help. If anything, it will hurt his receiving totals because Kenny Pickett can throw it more than 5 yards downfield, which Ben Roethlisberger couldn't. So though we saw last year, Harris is clearly like the three down, like all terrain back. If those targets come scaled back a little bit, like Crane said, I don't think he's an elite runner by any means. I think he's a good volume runner, but I don't think he's a threat to give us like the 1,700 yard rushing season. And then if his receiving numbers come down, really, you're just hoping that on that volume, he runs hot on touchdowns, where I think the efficiency Dalvin Cook has shown throughout his career makes me confident that, yeah, he doesn't need all 300 touches, right? He can go on 220, 250 if he ups his receiving total. So like Crane said, if we get a truly dominant season from one of these guys, I think it's Dalvin Cook, even if the sort of median projection looks a little better for Najee Harris.
So with Najee, to kind of hear what you guys are saying, you're basically making a play for his floor, whereas with Dalvin Cook, just the much higher ceiling, essentially.
Totally.
That's how I see it.
All right, moving further down the draft board, another running back debate here, and we're getting to potentially heavy committee territory. This is with Chase Edmonds, 77th overall in terms of ADP. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, 77th overall in terms of ADP. So, Kyle, which of these situations do you like better, and which back are you taking?
I mean, I'm going to take the guy who plays for the Chiefs because the Chiefs get in the red zone a lot. They throw a lot, and they're not averse to throwing to their running backs. It just has not been to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Like, Darrell Williams was a very good pass catcher out of the backfield when they used him that way. And now the backups for him, it looks like we're pushing towards, I'm sorry, Crane, Ronald Jones getting cut. He just seems like the odd man
that's
out.
That's happening. Yeah.
It's, you know.
You've accepted it.
I don't want to say
we're just hoping he goes to the Chargers. I mean, he's not playing for the Chiefs.
he could be a great Baltimore Raven in week four or something of that nature. But to me, if they're cutting him for Isaiah Pacheco, who I thought was a pretty lackluster prospect, he was a good athlete, but he had like next to no college production. He was a poor pass catcher. He was a terrible pass catcher in his final season. If that's your level of backup and like dead legs, Jerick McKinnon, I feel pretty good about Clyde Edwards-Helaire seeing enough of the workload on an offense that we absolutely love with an ADOT for the entire offense that is compressing towards not running back level. It's still Patrick Mahomes, but in the right direction. I think he's going to get a lot of high leverage touches. They're not going to run a ton because they're the Chiefs. Why would you? But if they're running enough in the red zone, they're throwing more to their running backs. That's all you need. I don't care if he's not the Najee Harris 300 touches. Again, we're playing for ceiling here. And to me, the guy who now has a very clear path to all he has to do is be decent, which is a bit of an ask from Clyde Edwards-Helaire, but all he has to do is be decent at a few skills, and it seems like the ceiling is just so obvious for him to attain.
It seems a little disrespectful to call McKinnon dead legs McKinnon. He's playoff Jerry now. Okay.
It's true. The playoff run was great, but they also waited like multiple months after free agency started to even consider bringing him back. So their value on him, same thing against Ronald Jones. Literally by the dollars they spent, their value on him is very low. And you would have thought he would have earned like a 2-year, few million dollar deal, and he wasn't getting that. So,
yeah, and I'll defend Jerick McKinnon, but I think it's CEH. And I was actually like, what's going on? Because I've had sort of an easier time clicking the button on Chase Edmonds than on Clyde Edwards-Helaire. But I feel like it's Edmonds is moving up. And maybe he's moving up to a range where I'm no longer comfortable because, I agree with Kyle. I mean, I don't want to bet on CEH, but I do want to bet on the Chiefs. So
the duality of man.
The duality of man.
Lawrence, where are you on this one?
So it's crazy, right? Because what Kyle says about Pacheco is like, yeah, it's cool. I'm with that. I don't actually see Pacheco as a true threat to Clyde Edwards-Helaire and his touches and his usage and his importance to the offense. Jerick McKinnon is going to get his run. That's true. But I don't know, man. In the drafts that I've been doing, I'm just going to go with the guy that I – like, this is who I've been – I've been drafting Chase Edmonds and not Clyde Edwards-Helaire. But – like Karain said, in the past just few days, if not like a week ago, he moving up a little bit. I also feel like Chase Edmonds could mess around and have a career year. Now, it sounds crazy saying career year, but he's never rushed for more than 600 yards in a season. His career high in receptions in the season is 53 and 400 receiving yards. There's reports out now that he's the clear RB1 in Miami. So it's like, I mean, now CH is the clear lead of his committee as well. I'm just going with the guy who I feel is just like a little bit better in the pass catching game. And I feel like he's going to be more, I feel like he's going to be more part of the Dolphins passing game than what CH is of the Chiefs passing game. They'll work in McKinnon on that part. But like I say, it's tough. Like, I see Clyde Edwards-Helaire in some drafts now, and he just, I mean, he just getting roasted in the public right now. But if he fall to a certain spot, like, you got to take him just because he played for the Chiefs. But because I've been drafting Chase Edmonds and his skill set, and now he got this chance to finally be that lead back. He got that money now. You know, he got that bread. So, you know, that money talk. I'm going to go with Chase Edmonds off of that.
If I was sure of one of these, you guys picking one player, I thought it was Kerrane and Chase Edmonds. So I'm still reeling a little bit on this one.
No, nah, Kerrane's rebranding as a bad players guy, I think.
I mean, you got me covered there after taking David Montgomery yesterday on the happy hour.
We're not talking about this. I'll be upset. You don't understand the thesis of the play.
I can take as many bad players as I want. You still got your brand.
I was never here to take good players, only bad.
These is tough.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to hear one more running back, guys, and then we'll hit some receivers. But our final running back showdown, I think this is a pretty intriguing one. It's Texans rookie Damian Pierce at 79. Ramondre Stevenson at 80, who, by the way, based on the ADP we're using today, is going about 20 spots ahead of Damian Harris. That's just as a side note. But keeping this between Pierce and Ramondre, which guy are you drafting, Kerrane?
I mean, I'm drafting Ramondre. I mean, if there was anyone you could bet on there, I feel like that was the biggest.
This is the easiest bet.
I mean, Ramondre, I was in on as a prospect, and then he had a very strong rookie season, 1.66 yards per route run, and showed some ability at the goal line. That was the whole play with Ramondre. He's a really big running back. PFF has him listed at 246 here, who can also be used as a receiver. if you look at kind of Damian Pierce, like what was nice about him as a prospect, he was a capable receiver. He had 1.07 career yards per hour run. That's fine. Ramondre was elite, 2.11. You look at what Damian Pierce did best. He was very elusive on a per touch basis. Ramondre was also elite at that. And Ramondre also showed breakaway ability in college, which Damian Pierce didn't. The red flag for both guys is that they were career committee backs. But we've already seen Ramondre Stevenson at the NFL level and start to generate buzz that, you know, it could actually be Ramondre who's the lead back here. And this could actually be a backfield that leaves their backs out for all three downs instead of telegraphing their next play by bringing the running back who does that thing out on the field. So yeah. I think kind of everything's moving in Ramondre's direction in a really nice way. Now everything's moving in Pierce's direction as well. He's clearly going to be their early down guy, their early down lead back. But I think from, you know, the upside of the offense perspective, Pierce is still going to be the lead back on the Texans. We don't know for sure what his role is going to be as a pass catcher. I'm more optimistic about Stevenson's role there, more optimistic about just the number of touchdowns that are going to be available. Pierce, I do think, is pretty interesting around the goal line. That's one thing he did really well in college as well, scored a lot of touchdowns. But, yeah, just from kind of if we're talking tiebreakers here, I mean, the offense strongly goes to Stevenson and the receiving stuff strongly goes to Stevenson. So I wish I got more Pierce early in drafts. I really do. He was a really, really nice value before. I think if he's going near Stevenson, I want Stevenson.
Yeah, I'll make this one 2 for 2. I didn't really care too much for Damian Pierce coming out of college. Like, you look at his final season versus Ramondre's. Ramondre's, I believe he opted out, if I remember correctly, because he only played in 6 games that year. In just 6 games, he earned more carries and one fewer catch than Damian Pierce did playing a full 13. Like, we say, yeah, Ramondre spent most of his very short time in college, at least at the FBS level as a committee back, but he was on pace for an absolutely nuclear final season. Like, he was going to go off both as a receiver and as a runner. He was on pace for, like, I think 1,300 yards in just a 12-game sample and a few hundred through the air as well. Damian Pierce has shown nothing being committee back, and that'd be fine. Like, his committee mates in the NFL are nothing to write home about. It's Marlon Mack and Rex Burkhead, but he needs to truly dominate that backfield to really be a win win at his current cost, because that backfield is going to be terrible. The whole team should be very bad. One of the lowest win totals, maybe the lowest win total over on points bet. So I think there'll be a team with a mediocre offensive line that's losing all the time. And I don't want the committee back on that team. And I think it will end up being a committee at a minimum, with Rex Burkhead probably coming in to serve as a pass blocker and to catch some passes, where I'm fine with a committee back who has the good touches, the catches, and potentially the goal line stuff. I'm fine with that if they play on a really good offense like the Patriots. So I think their roles could be somewhat similar, but one of them plays for a team that is just not going to be dreadful.
So you think the Patriots are going to have a really good offense?
I think they were like top 10
better
scoring
than
last
the Texans.
Year. Yeah, that ignores
the Texans. I don't know about that.
What is going on? No.
Everything that happened last year don't have to happen this year. I know a rookie running back who was on a bad team, ended up as an RB1. His name was James Robinson. Listen, Damian Harris, that young man ain't going nowhere. He run too hard. He run too good for him. I like Ramondre Stevenson just like the next guy here, but let's be real. Damian Pierce is more explosive, right? Ramondre Stevenson has to overtake, and he has to battle and wiggle out touches. All right, he's going to get his touches, but he's going up against Damian Pierce, and Damian Harris. Too many Damians here in the equation right now. Damian Pierce has to overtake our Lord and Savior Marlon Mack here. Right. Damian Pierce did not play in that last preseason game. You know, I feel like that's what kind of made his ADP rise. I didn't like that, because that doesn't necessarily mean he the RB1 from the jump. This is how I feel about it. I feel like Damian Pierce has a clearer path to becoming that true RB1. And yeah, probably definitely on the worst team. But I think Davis Mills.
It's nice of you to admit, Lawrence.
We got there.
Let me be honest here. what they did in college, you know, that's cool. That's all fine and dandy. But that won't matter today when they get into now that they're in the league. That's not going to matter anymore in week one. They got to play ball. Ramondre Stevenson, you know, he kind of got off to a slow start last year. He picked it up the second half. Mm-hmm. Now he's leaning on to that pass catcher role. That's why we like him. But that's what he'll have. Damian Pierce has the opportunity to be all of that for the Houston Texans, albeit a bad team. But like I say, you can be a rookie running back on a bad team and still excel. And, you know, Davis Mills, that boy gonna light it up. He gonna take that stuff up this year too. Now, so I'm riding.
You're back in on the Texans.
I know, should be slowly but surely.
Good luck, Godspeed, brother.
Give me the former Florida Gator. Since we talking about college, give me the former Florida Gator and Damian Pierce, baby.
I actually think the James Robinson comp is pretty interesting, because Robinson was not much of a receiver in college, and they were just like, yeah, you're going to do everything, and he was fine. And I think like Pierce showed enough as a receiver in college where, you know, he could be that kind of guy, that kind of three down guy for the Texans if that's who they want him to be. Very similar elusive numbers for James Robinson and Pierce in college as well.
When you guys are betting on Ramondre Stevenson, are you envisioning that, you know, a world where he and Damian Harris are splitting the early down work, and then Ramondre is getting more of the passing work than Damian Harris is? Is that kind of how you're looking at it? Like, how are you envisioning in a perfect world that this Patriots backfield shaking out for you?
Well, how perfect is this world you're talking about? Because
It's fine.
If it's a fine world, it is a very clear 1A, 1B. And we even had Bill Belichick come out and praise specifically the pass blocking of Ramondre, which is like such a crucial thing for these young players to get down to just stay on the field when otherwise they would be taken off for some veteran we have no interest in. So, yeah, I think it's that he plays like a very similar role to like James White while also getting a bunch of carries. Mm-hmm. Like his workload would look like DeAndre Swift or Alvin Kamara to that extent. In this good, not perfect world we live in. In a perfect world, Damian Harris just gets pushed out of the picture. But I don't think that's likely.
Damian Harris is Mark Ingram then in your analogy.
So he did have 600, still solid. He did have 600 rushing yards last year, Ramondre Stevenson did. So that is a good sign as well.
Yeah, it's kind of like, to me, it's that he can kind of be like half James White. I don't think he'll get the full James White role, but he can also be like half LeGarrette Blount. You know, he's got this profile that can really combine the high value work around the goal line. I don't think that like he's going to take that over. I think Damian Harris is definitely going to have his share of that. And I also don't think he's going to fully take over the passing game work. They'll probably mix in Ty Montgomery and stuff, but I think he has a chance to kind of get like a big chunk of both roles and then marry them together. And, you know, at his ADP, that would be really valuable.
And to be clear, you're talking about LeGarrette Blount the year he had 18 rushing touchdowns, right? That's the,
I'd hope yeah, he's so, talking about that.
Yeah, sorry, yeah, the Zoomers are probably like LeGarrette Blount. Yeah, no, he did. There was a year where being LeGarrette Blount was good.
Yeah. All right, we have more to come. Wide receivers and tight ends coming up. First, we're going to take
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
Quick break. Prep for your draft with the latest player rankings, projections, and more in the NBC Sports Edge Fantasy Football Draft Guide. Plus, it's powered by RotoWorld, the premier source for player news and fantasy information. Take advantage of our preseason special and get the draft guide for $5 when you use promo code DRAFTGUIDE at checkout on NBCSportsEdge.com/draftguide. Also, this week is the debut of Matthew Berry's new show, Fantasy Football Happy Hour with Matthew Berry. The legendary fantasy football analyst is back with NBC and RotoWorld, doing what he does best, discussing sleepers to draft, rolling out his love-hate list, breaking down who to start and sit, and much more. There will also be plenty of actionable information along the way for you sports bettors as well. Check it out weekdays in the afternoon on Peacock, or listen to the show in podcast form wherever you download and subscribe. Okay, guys, we are moving to wide receivers, where we have T. Higgins landing directly next to Michael Pittman at 27 and 28, respectively. Lawrence, you lead this one off. What's your preference here?
Now that we own the wide receivers, now it's going to get interesting. Now we're going to start scrapping now.
We're already scrapping a little bit.
T. Higgins and Michael Pittman, they're probably the easiest one for me, as I've got T. Higgins coming out with a major breakout this season. So I'm going to go him over Michael Pittman. I'll just look forward to T. Higgins building off what he was doing the end of last year, when he was a, you know, top 7-8 receiver in fantasy the last 6-7 weeks of the season. Had a great Super Bowl game. Would have been Super Bowl MVP if the Bengals won the game. They didn't win the game. By now, we in late August. We know all the stats. T. Higgins led the team. Targets per game, receptions per game, still almost had 1,100 yards despite missing the three games. Jamar Chase, who, you know, I think we'll all agree is the more talented of the two, defenses had to be on the lookout for that young man as well. On the Michael Pittman Jr. side, even though he settled in and finished as a wide receiver 17 last year, I think that, you know, Paris Campbell, if he's able to play some games, get him in there with Matt Ryan. You got the rookie Alec Pierce. Then you got a team who, you know, want to run that ball first in the Colts. I think Matt Ryan will be a nice little distributor of the football to all of them. So I could actually see Michael Pittman getting some sort of the same type of production that he gave us last year with the emergence of those other receivers. Meanwhile, on T. Higgins' side, well, you just got ballers all on that offense. And just T. Higgins as a player is just simply good. When you take all of that away, T. Higgins is a dog. Like, he is the wide receiver one on many teams in the NFL right now.
Yeah, I don't have enough Michael Pittman, and T. Higgins is a big part of the reason why. He's just so hard for me to pass on in the third round. He's kind of been like a year ahead of schedule compared to Michael Pittman so far in their careers. Just look at yards per route run. Michael Pittman had 1.44 as a rookie, not very good. Higgins, 1.83, very promising. Then Higgins breaks out 2.18 yards per route run last season. Really impressive season from a rookie wide receiver. He's a deep threat, kind of fits perfectly with what the Bengals need and I think want to do this year, pressing their advantage with their offensive line improving. Michael Pittman had a good second season as well, 1.95 yards per out run, but not to that elite T. Higgins level, more similar to what he did as a rookie. So I feel like if we're talking about a guy taking another step forward, we're probably looking at a step forward from both guys, but we could see the Bengals really lean into the passing game. There's upside for that with the improvement in the offensive play, with them going back to more of their pass rate of expected from two seasons ago before Joe Burrow got hurt. That's one way this season can play out for them, and it's, I think, probably the best way that it can play out for them from a wins perspective. That's the strength of their team, Joe Burrow and these two receivers. They've got two receivers who would be clear number one options on their teams. I completely agree with that, Lawrence. So if they weren't together, Higgins and Chase. So, yeah, I think it's not a negative thing on Pittman. Pittman should see a target, should see better quality targets, should see more consistent offense from Matt Ryan. Maybe they pass a little bit more than last year, because they definitely started to go towards the run last year because, you know, they seem to be, and as we know now, were out on Carson Wentz, and that changed their offensive approach. So I think both are good picks, but, I mean, Higgins is a superstar you can get in the third round. We're hoping Pittman breaks into a superstar. I feel confident that Higgins basically already is one.
Yeah, I agree that I would take Higgins when they're going like back to back. But I think there's a strong argument that I'm going to make for Michael Pittman that is the reason, like Crane said, you know, I should probably, if I'm doing all these best ball drafts, I should get more Pittman, because he looks like he could be a really good player. And it wouldn't surprise me if he had a massive breakout season. I mean, like Crane said, he was strong in yards per out run last year, not elite, but strong in an improvement. And I like to see that upward trajectory. He's also top 20 in weighted opportunity rating. And looking back at college, like, he is the type of player who could really dominate his team. He had like a 30% dominator rating on a team with Amon-Ra St. Brown, who we now know is really good, and Drake London, who we believe is really good, and Bayless Jones, who there's not a thing I'm going to say after that one, but the other two are really good for sure. Bayless Jones is good. Who knows? So he was able to be a massive producer alongside serious NFL talent. And I would say those players are probably significantly better than the duo behind him, who are fine, Alec Pierce and Paris Campbell, but like St. Brown and London, probably better. So it really wouldn't shock me if he goes out and just has an incredibly dominant, just market share type of season. And I could see this team running far less. And this is what Frank Reich is literally telling us to our faces, that he does not want to run the ball as much last year. He said, you don't see teams that have this ground and pound run game win championships, which like blows my mind for a coach who had success doing that. They did the ground and pound thing as well as you possibly could. And they were bad quarterback play, not ground and pound issues, away from at least making the playoffs. And he's still, I just think it's really smart of him, frankly, to recognize their good, I'd say their success last year, and say, well, that type of success is in a way not sustainable, or at least doesn't have a ceiling. So he knows that you need to pass more. You need to be a successful passing team. So I would direct them to pass considerably more, not only philosophically, but then obviously just the talent upgrade going to Matt Ryan. So I think there's a strong argument to be made for Pittman here. Ultimately, I do fall on the side of Higgins, but like, Pittman could be a superstar. I feel a little more confident that Higgins has already shown that he is, but Pittman could be that same type of player on an offense with far less competition for targets.
So it sounds like all of you guys would choose T. Higgins if given this choice.
I don't know about Kyle. He sounds pretty.
I'm trying to get my
best ball, bro. He's spreading out his exposure.
I am. You better believe it.
But it sounds like the ADP makes sense. You guys aren't like, having Pittman shortly behind Higgins makes sense to all of you. Like, close call.
I think Pittman's a little,
or not so much.
It's one of those things where, like, if Pittman hits, it's not a problem. Like, his ADP is not overly expensive if he hits on the potential that he has. His upside is warranted, like, where he's going is warranted by his upside. But I also think you can make the same case for DJ Moore, and he goes even cheaper than Pittman. So, that, you know, there's A.J. Brown has massive upside. He sometimes falls to the third round, and I'm like, A.J. Brown or Pittman? I have a really hard time clicking Pittman and almost never do. Mm-hmm. So that I wish Pittman was the 309, and then I would be talking about what a target he is. So I think he's probably well priced, right? Like, this stuff should be hard, and he's priced at a level where it is hard. So well done, market.
All right, moving into the 40s, one of the most debated and discussed players in the lead up to the season, Gabriel Davis is being drafted on average 43rd overall. Terry McLaurin, one spot behind that at 44, and for good measure, we're going to complicate this one. We're going to throw in possibly another polarizing option in Diontae Johnson with an ADP of 46. So you have Gabriel Davis, 43, Terry McLaurin, 44, Diontae Johnson, 46. This is the one and only three-man ADP battle we'll be doing. Kyle, how do you sort this one out?
I mean, I think probably the right answer is Gabe Davis. The best ball teams I have drafted would say it's Gabe Davis. But for me, I think Diontae Johnson actually is sort of the Pittman thing. I think I know my answer. I can tell you my teams have a right answer. But I do want to try and get back in on Diontae, especially with the way – I mean, I feel more confident now. I felt a little sweaty with any of my Diontae teams already when all the camp reports were like, oh, Mason Rudolph might be the number two. Kenny Pickett looking sus. And Kenny Pickett, he just honestly has lit it up during his two preseason games. I believe he scored twice in the first one. And then he led a really good just like throwing darts two-minute drill on the second one. Threw two touchdowns, one of which was called back. Then he immediately goes out and just throws the touchdown again. So he looks good. He looks like the real deal. I don't think he's elite, but Ben Roethlisberger certainly wasn't elite. And Diontae Johnson's role on this offense, just I understand it had to be in some sense fueled by Ben Roethlisberger's inability to throw deep, because Diontae Johnson is a really good player on short and intermediate stuff. But players who do what he did don't just disappear, I would imagine. You know, he was top five in targets per route run, i.e. anytime he was out there running around, he was getting targeted on them at one of the highest rates, like higher than Justin Jefferson and Tyreek Hill, true superstars, and he was earning targets on that level. And he can be a deep receiver. I don't think he's the team's number one deep receiver, but he led them in deep targets last year. He was top two on the team in deep targets each of the 2 years before that. So it's not like Najee Harris, where I think if the targets go farther down the field, that is just straight up bad for Najee Harris. Almost no running back is getting targets down the field. And if they are, it's really an Eckler or an Aaron Jones or a McCaffrey. It's not quite to Najee's level as a receiver talent, right? Diontae Johnson has shown an ability to earn targets deep too. So I think he can operate at all portions of the field. Is there some part he is better at? Yeah, and it's short. But he's not drawing dead if they decide to push the ball a little farther down the field. And his ability to draw targets on an offense that could improve under Kenny Pickett, I think is worth considering. I'm going to take a really talented looking receiver with Josh Allen. But if Diontae Johnson goes out and is like an elite target earner on an offense that surprises us, I like that wouldn't surprise me, frankly.
Lawrence, hit it.
All right, I win. Fine. Deal.
Yeah.
All right. So who'd you go with?
Gabe Davis.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I liked it. It's like, okay, but Kyle, who did you pick?
I have to guess that Gabe Davis will get picked on one of the next two people, and I don't want this to all be like us patting each other on the backs. Like,
I can assure you, I'm not about to pat you on the back right here.
Well, if I had taken the player,
I might drop kick you in the back right now.
Wow.
Listen, that Gabe Davis, right out of these three players. First off, let's just take all the situations out of it. Gabe Davis is easily, like, when you rank these three, he's three far and away, just as football players. That's one. You can attach the Gabe Davis to a hot air balloon and let that fly up into the clouds, which is where everybody's head is at when it comes to this, right? Diontae Johnson, we all agree that Big Ben wasn't really much last year. Despite that, Diontae Johnson was still able to finish as a top 10 receiver, wide receiver 8, I believe. We got Terry McLaurin coming in here. You know, he's finally – I mean, we just talked about Carson Wentz, but we'll talk about Carson Wentz in a better light now as in the fact that he's the best quarterback that Terry McLaurin
has relative.
Had.
It's all relative.
Yeah, right. You know, we'll show Carson Wentz some love in this fashion. He's the best quarterback that Terry McLaurin – has ever had. And, you know, he's been consistent, getting us those near 1,100 yards three straight years. Then we got Gabe Davis over here, just, you know, who's just going to play little third, little fiddle to the slot guy. Look out for Isaiah McKenzie, by the way. That's who I like even later. That's who I – Josh Allen loves that slot. That's who I like. So if the guy I would go with here out of this group, I'm definitely going to pick not Gabe Davis. Give me Deontay Johnson once Kenny Pickett get in there.
Yeah, I need a screen grab of Karain's face a second ago. That was
I almost put it in like our private chat that Karain makes the goofy YouTube thumbnail face.
I did do a thumbnail face. My mouth was not agape, so it doesn't. It would
we're gonna
be,
have to go
rejected.
Back and get that.
Yeah, but we outside that. Of that,
carry on.
I mean, I think maybe. So first of all, I believe I heard that everything that happened last year might not happen this year, right? We can look forward, right?
You're right.
I know Deontay Johnson had a lot of targets. I know Terry McLaurin, you know, he's had a pretty good career. Gabe Davis may be held down by the fact that Emmanuel Sanders was in the deep threat role for the Bills. We think, oh, you know, the secondary role for the Bills, really the slot guy. You really want to be Cole Beasley. That's who you want to be when you play with Josh Allen. What if you're good and you play on the outside and you play a deep threat role? If you're good and you do that, maybe you go nuclear against the Chiefs. Maybe that's what happens. You know, maybe if you actually get played and you have a 17 ADOT, you go nuts and you destroy fantasy football. I don't know. It seems possible. You're playing with Josh Allen as his primary deep threat. It seems kind of exciting. So I'm in on Gabe Davis. He would be my choice there. But I will say Deontay Johnson, with the Kenny Pickett stuff, I'm with you, Kyle. I mean, I'm starting to get a little bit more bullish on this offense. The critique of Kenny Pickett is that he tends to be like one read and then he scrambles. That's what some of the beat writers have been saying from watching practice so far. That's cool. One read to Deontay Johnson is probably the way that's going to go. So, yeah. So I'm fine with that. I think, you know, as long as the offense is somewhat competent, you know, and the bar is low, it just has to be kind of where they were with Ben Roethlisberger. And if Kenny Pickett is looking to make quick, short throws, then I think Deontay Johnson can have a ton of targets once again. I just think the ceiling on Johnson in terms of yards per target actually producing just an incredible wide receiver season is maybe a little less enticing, but I am starting to think that, you know, maybe Deontay Johnson should be going more like the early fourth. But I'm comfortable with Gabe Davis in the early to mid fourth as well. So I'm it's much closer, but I'm still going Gabe.
One thing about Gabe and him being good and, you know, Emmanuel Sanders being bad and John Brown before that was bad as well, you would think, had he been good, he would play over a player who is bad. Like, 'cause good is better than bad. But the coaches said, no, the bad one. Let's play the bad one over Gabe Davis, which is the only I'm taking a lot of Gabe Davis.
We have a long history of this, though, with day three guys having to prove it.
Yeah,
they prove it, and then they have to prove it again. And then to prove it again, like we've seen it, you know, and you see guys who are day three guys, they tend to emerge later in their careers. Some of them were like, you know, basically special, like Victor Cruz coming out of nowhere. Like, I mean, I think he was undrafted, but there's something to, you know, if you don't have the draft capital behind you, it generally takes more and more to kind of get the coach's trust. So it certainly seems like he has it now, though.
That's ironic you say that. His teammate Stephon Diggs is also a fifth round pick.
Exactly.
He would nice out that gate, though. He didn't take him long to figure out Stephon Diggs was that boy.
Well, they did trade him, Lawrence. They did trade him.
They had to do what they had to do. A receiver getting traded nowadays, is that's just like normal life.
It's Tuesday, baby. That's Tuesday.
So, well, he didn't have 1,000 yards until his third season, Stephon Diggs.
That could be Gabe Davis.
I did build this as a three wide receiver position battle, ADP battle. That was inaccurate. I believe it was a two-person battle between Johnson and Gabriel Davis, with Terry McLaurin just kind of standing on the sideline watching.
Yep.
He refereed this one.
Yeah, it's messed up.
Right?
Man.
I mean,
how you gonna do Terry like that?
Lawrence, I didn't do it.
I didn't do it. You guys did it. I tried to show
Terry a little bit of love.
I agree that he's going to have his best quarterback play, but it's tough to get excited about the Commanders this year.
Yeah.
That was my favorite part of this whole thing, though, where we were saying, how Michael Pittman gets a huge upgrade, getting rid of Wentz, anything but Wentz. And then we're like, McLaurin's got Wentz now. So this could be big.
You had to point that out.
Yeah. All right. We have one more wide receiver battle to hit and a tight end battle to come first. One more very quick break.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
I know how to run a hair salon, but for small business insurance, I chose my State Farm agent. She's a small business owner too, so she knew how to help me personalize my policies. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to an agent today.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Just a reminder, if you don't have the NBC Sports Predictor app, go download it now. The contests are free and easy to play, and you have a shot to win thousands by predicting what will happen in Major League Baseball, NASCAR, Premier League, and more. And our Sunday Night Football contest, SN7, will return for the start of the NFL season. Download the app today for your chance to win big. All right, our final wide receiver showdown is between Rashad Bateman, ADP of 56, DK Metcalf, ADP of 56. I'll let you guys lay out what your concerns are with each guy. If you have concerns with each guy, let's just go to Karain. What are your thoughts here?
Well, the concerns with Bateman is that he was not very good last year. Only 1.26 yards per hour, and genuine red flag. Fairly shallow usage, 8 out of 9.6. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in a low-volume passing offense, you don't want to be more of an underneath wide receiver. That's just not going to cut it. Marquise Brown is gone, but Mark Andrews, you know, I think is fair to say is the top target on this team. So, again, don't want to be the number two guy on a low-volume passing offense. I do think that there are some reasons to be optimistic, though, on Bateman, because he was a very, very good prospect, highly productive, early declare, first-round pick. And the fact that Marquise Brown is gone, I think, could change his role to getting more downfield targets. He was also much more efficient with Lamar Jackson than he was with Tyler Huntley. And mm-hmm. So that has me leaning Bateman here, even though, you know, DK Metcalf is obviously a star. The Seattle offense is probably going to be really bad, and like the Ravens, wants to be run heavy. So you have the same red flag, but much worse quarterback play. And if we're talking about target competition, I mean, Tyler Lockett is a legitimate target competition as well. So, you know, I'd rather bet on the Bateman breakout in a better offense than the guy I know is good in a much worse offense. But I could see the case for Metcalf here as well, who obviously is a star.
Yeah, Karain, I think, laid it out pretty well. All I'll add is I'm just not taking Drew Lock's 1A receiver. Not going to do it. If that's what ends up ending my season, oh well. GG, no re. I'll see you next year.
Yeah, this one, you know, this one tough because, you know, the only thing, this is easy. If DK Metcalf still have Russell Wilson, we wouldn't even be putting these two together. And it's right. Not like we saying that Rashad Bateman is on some Jamar Chase type level, but he is good enough to be the wide receiver one for that Ravens team. Man, you probably have to draft DK Metcalf first. So I'll probably take Rashad Bateman because you could get him.
No, can't. These are ADP battles, Lawrence. They're going next to the other side. Yeah.
I think in our draft, I ended up getting in that situation where I'm looking at DK Metcalf. Yeah, I'm looking at him, but like Rashad Bateman went around later. But I was just like, for this day, you know, okay, for this day, it's going to be DK Metcalf because I know he a stud, and I mean he mm-hmm. he was effective and he was good and he caught a lot of touchdowns when Geno played last year. So I'm kind of hoping it's Geno. He don't run as much as Drew Lock. He's a better decision maker. So if it ends up being Geno Smith, which I think it probably will be, I feel a little better about DK, but that's what's really just holding DK down at this point. But if you had to make me choose, I'd just choose both.
Oh, man. I thought Kyle was the indecisive. You thought I was like,
give me at least Bateman. Lawrence said it. At least Lawrence said
he said Bateman. He said Bateman.
Give me Bateman, man. I'll take that. I'll take those 1,100 yards he about to get. He'll do what Hollywood did last year. He could do that.
Okay. So was that two Batemans, one Metcalf? Is that kind of where we landed?
No, three. It was three. Yeah.
I think three Batemans.
Oh. I thought Lawrence just said Metcalf.
Nah, he ended with Bateman. He definitely said Metcalf at one point.
Oh, that's not the Metcalf, last thing he said. And then he said Bateman.
Nah. Okay.
Yeah.
He was okay. Before
that. I switched.
All right. Okay. All right.
I'm a bandwagon.
Is it seriously though? While we're on the Seahawks, is the answer here maybe just wait and take Tyler Lockett much later? Like, how do you guys feel about Lockett versus Metcalf? It feels like a very hard situation to read, which is why I think Lockett is falling in drafts. Does anyone have a read on this one?
I'm
taking Lockett occasionally, which makes me feel like he must be underpriced.
Yeah, it's icky, but I mean, I think the gap between their usage is going to be a lot closer than people think it is. And I think DK Metcalf is a better player, but we've seen time and time again. Last year, it was the air yard share, which Tyler Lockett held the crown of the team. The year before that, it was the target share. They kind of flip-flop depending on what role they're using over the course of 17 games. Neither one of them to this point has completely separated themselves. If one of them is going to do it, obviously it's going to be DK Metcalf, but I wouldn't bet so strongly on it to cause the discrepancy in ADP that we see. So every once in a while, I take Lockett because I feel like he's good for some spike weeks and at a very big discount to DK Metcalf, but it's not something I'm excited about. I don't feel happy when I do it, but I do it. And that's okay.
The wide receiver quarterback relationship there that he had, that Lockett had with Russell Wilson, was almost second to none. And now he doesn't have that. And I feel like that's the reason, you know, he done went way down. And people just, for Metcalf, they saying, well, at least it's still DK Metcalf. So, you know.
Lockett did have one big game with Geno Smith, but I think the other few were not so great. And Kyle, it sounds like you just described not a perfect world, but a fine world. You felt fine about it when you take Tyler Lockett there.
Yep, I'd say fine at best.
Yeah. All right, last we're going to hit one matchup of tight ends. TJ Hockenson is going on average at 59. Dallas Goedert is a few spots behind that with an ADP of 62. Is this a fun decision to make? Maybe not, but Lawrence, who do you like here?
Of course, it's not the fun decision to make. We should have did this one first. give me Dallas Goedert right here. And again, these are good. It's another tough one, but I'm just going with the expected evolvement of this offense, and Dallas Goedert is going to be a huge part of that. In fact, I think he'll rival him and Devontae Smith gonna battle it out for a second in targets on that team, and I think it could be Dallas Goedert, especially when you're talking about this type of offense, this type of run first offense. Dallas Goedert could be that security blanket guy for Jalen Hurts. He cleared 800 yards last year as a receiver on 56 catches, so that's a lot of yards per catch for a tight end who's not, you know, it ain't like he Kyle Pitts or anything like that. TJ Hockenson did get off to a nice little start the first couple weeks last year, got some touchdowns in there. But now with the Lions, you know, we all feeling like DeAndre Swift going to kind of like do his little breakout thing. You got Amon-Ra St. Brown coming back, DJ Chark coming in there to take some more targets. Who's the other receiver? This is killing me. It's not Jameson Williams.
Jameson Williams, DJ Chark,
eventually
Josh Reynolds.
Yeah, eventually Jameson Williams. So, you know, it's a lot to deal with there on a team that we don't really know what they're going to do. We can't let Hard Knocks fool us into thinking that this is going to be some good football team. You know what I'm saying? We don't know. The thing we feel the best about the Lions is DeAndre Swift and then, you know, Amon-Ra St. Brown. I feel better about the stability of the Eagles, their team and their offense and their continuity, that word. I feel better about them, so I'm going to go with Dallas Goedert right there.
Yeah, I think we're going to sweep this one as well, because I know Crane's answer, I'm pretty sure. But, I mean, Goddard, he was, like, modestly efficient throughout the first few years of his career, and we're all waiting for the breakout. They get rid of Zach Ertz kind of as expected, and they up his volume both in terms of routes and targets. And you think, oh, that's good, but how will his efficiency scale with that? Will it be the increased role is sort of too much weight for him to bear? And in fact, he turns in one of the most efficient seasons, his most by far, and one of the most in the NFL. He was second only to George Kittle in yards per route run, and Kittle is elite in that metric. There's a pretty big gap between two and three. So it is those two than the rest last year. He also turns in the second best season last year by yards after the catch per reception among tight ends. So the increased volume, if anything, it helped him. I think he just grew as a player. He continued getting better. So to me, if we're going to see, which we obviously will, this new full-time role for him, and he's as efficient as we saw last year, there's just no reason for him not to absolutely slam dunk with the way that we all kind of feel good about the Eagles offense progressing from their super run heavy last year to, I'll just call it balance. I don't think they're gonna be pass heavy, but I think they'll pass more. Mm-hmm. That's what you do when you have Jalen Hurts improving. You trade for AJ Brown and pay him like $100 million. That's what you do. You pass more. So I think the pass more will be really good for all involved, and that includes Dallas uh-huh. Goedert, who looks like one of the next elite tight ends.
Yeah, I think the Ertz trade part of this has gone maybe a little underappreciated in terms of just how important that is. And just also in terms of hiding who the number two option was last year for the Eagles. And it was Dallas Goedert post-Ertz trade. He had a 24% target share to 22% for Devontae Smith. That's obviously a big deal because we need to know who the number two guy is going to be once A.J. Brown takes over as the number one. And to Kyle's point about the efficiency ramping up, Goddard through the first 6 weeks when Ertz was still there had a yards per out run of 1.74. His elite stretch was post-Ertz trade when he had a yards per out run of 2.66. So he blossomed with more volume. I think, you know, if you're comparing him to Hockenson, both guys are going to have target competition. You know, Amon-Ra St. Brown mm-hmm. and Jameson Williams down the stretch. You know, I think there's a talent-based bet that we're making here on both players. It's not like just obvious that the targets have to funnel. They're both guys are going to have to earn targets. I want to bet on the guy who earned targets last year and was yeah. very efficient on his work and was most efficient when he was getting the most work. I haven't seen Hockenson flash anything elite in terms of efficiency in his entire career. He's never done it. His career high in yards per run is 1.57. It's fine. It's not great. I know he's a really good prospect, but at this point, this is his fourth NFL season. I want to bet on what I've already seen from them on the field. So to me, I mean, I'm getting an offensive breakout potential with the Eagles. And I feel like I'm getting a huge discount on one of the most likely guys to benefit from that, who, by the way, is tight end eligibility. I'm getting him cheaper than Devontae Smith, and he's the one that could really impact my team because I can play him at tight end.
Right. Yeah, definitely a target there later in drafts if you can't get a guy like, you know, Kyle Pitts or Dalton Schultz. I would have no problem going into week one, you know, with Goddard as my tight end one, and I would actually feel like I wouldn't have to stream the position. Like, I would feel good about Goddard every week.
Yep.
And hearing you guys talk about that, it's almost shocking. I don't want to overstate it, but it's only a difference of three spots, but that Hockenson is three spots ahead of Goddard in terms of ADP. I'm curious. I mean, what can any of you put yourselves in the mind of drafters there and make a very quick case for Hockenson over Goddard? What's the scenario here where it happens?
So we're using tight end premium ADP, and I guess in this case, it probably would be like you feel maybe a little bit better about the target volume because there's uh-huh. not a true alpha wide receiver like there is with A.J. Brown in Detroit. But on Underdog, I believe Goddard has now flipped Hockenson in ADP. Okay. So that's where obviously where I'm at on it.
Yeah, I'd take him straight up over Schultz too. Like I think he's one of the more talented tight ends in the NFL. Dallas Goedert is, and I like Schultz, but he's more in that just a guy plus territory that I think T.J. Hockenson is also in. Like a very serviceable, can garner targets, but isn't going to be elite on that volume, and also isn't going to threaten to have one of the highest target shares. So I just don't see how he has this absolute smash season. Goddard, I think, has that perfectly within his range.
Also, really quickly bringing this back to where we started, thinking about Jalen Hurts' weapons when you guys were just talking about Goddard and A.J. Brown, et cetera, Devonta Smith. I mean, you look at Jalen Hurts' passing numbers last year, 3,144 yards, 16 touchdowns. Lawrence, it's hard to imagine how he doesn't absolutely smash those.
Yeah. Especially in the touchdown department. If the yards stay the same, cool. He could probably throw for 10 more touchdowns in that this season. And just look at those numbers. And he was still an elite, fantasy quarterback option there.
Yeah. All right, guys, that's the end of our list for this episode. Anything you guys would like to mention on NBC Sports Edge before we get out of here?
We just had the reunion show. We had the reunion show. That's kind of the big one. That'll be out by the time you are hearing this, because we record a little ahead of time. And we were, me, Lawrence, Pat, were all on that with different Roto-World alums. Really cool to get people from far beyond our time, sort of our predecessors, back and get some great insight from them.
Yeah, check out who we're actually drafting in a real draft. I'll also mention I have an article out on the site right now that looks into the early round running backs and just kind of examining their upside scenarios and downside scenarios this season, but with the eye of trying to find the guys who can have those legendary seasons, like Christian McCaffrey 2019, like Jonathan Taylor more or less had last year, although not quite to the level of some of the previous absolute rock stars of years past. So that's out on rotoworld.com.
Yeah, just for me, man, check out the stock up, stock down going on. I got that article going on during the preseason, just keeping y'all up to date on players whose ADP may be rising or falling simply based on their performances in the preseason, so outside of that, that's what we got going on here.
All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening. Make sure to, as we mentioned, check out the Roto-World reunion mock draft and keep it posted here for more podcasts coming out next week. We'll see you guys later.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Is this house a good price compared to others in the area? Are prices going up or down? If I don't make an offer right this very moment, will I miss my chance? These are just some of the questions a home buyer might ask. And these are the sorts of questions an agent who is a Realtor can help answer. Because Realtors have the expertise, data, and access to specialty training to help you navigate the process of buying a home. They provide support, guidance, and have your back every step of the way. That's what Realtors do, because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.